Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into recent market moves. We're going to be looking at some of the macro factors that are driving the moves in financial markets, particularly equities. And we're also going to be drilling down into a number of developments on the earnings front this week. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Mark Kimsey, who is the director at F&O Research. Mark, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jonathan. Good afternoon.
So, Mark, you were on the podcast recently, but before we get into it, please would you be able to give us just a very brief introduction to yourself and F&O Research?
Yeah, sure. F&O Research exists to provide retail investors with all of the must-know information regarding market developments. And, the key to success a lot of the time is finding out about market developments in a timely fashion, not a week later. And we look to provide investors with broker comments, technical analysis, and that all important breaking news. So we're hoping it's your go-to for everything market related to help one with their investment decisions.
Thank you. So we're going to be talking about some of that breaking news and what's been moving markets this week on the podcast. One of the companies we're going to focus on today is Nvidia, and we're going to be looking at their earnings and what it means for the stock. But we will start with the macro picture, the real macro picture, Mark, and look at some of the big developments this week. And it came from the conflict in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine, and we saw quite a quick and violent sell-off earlier on this week on the news that Joe Biden had given Ukraine the permission to fire missiles into Russia, which it quickly did, which was met by a response of threats of nuclear action by Russia. We saw a very quick sell-off, but an almost equally as quick rally back up on those headlines. So I think we just want to look at this setup in markets that we're seeing at the moment and the conflicts that we're seeing around the world. And, the question is, Mark, are markets becoming desensitized to conflicts? Do we have to see some major escalation in these conflicts to see any sustained move? Or do you think even then, given the tragedies that we've seen over the past 2 years and how that's been factored into markets and then reversed, that to some extent now people are really focusing on things such as interest rates and what's going to be happening with Donald Trump? Or do you still think there's some concerns about the conflicts that we're seeing globally?
I think there's always a justified level of concern regarding conflict. Putting financial markets to one side, of course, there's the impact on human life, which is deeply tragic. Bringing that back to financial markets, which is the topic of the podcast, I think we're in a situation whereby we can kind of revert back to the saying of buy the rumor, sell the fact, which applies to a lot of market moves, and that could be associated with like a contract win or some merger and acquisition activity. There's say one company considering buying another that gets leaked into the press. We see an upward move in the share price of the target company, and then when the deal actually materializes, there's not a lot more to be had in terms of upward movement because it's already taken place. And I think we can see that in the threat of conflict. If we go back to yesteryear when there was the concern that Russia may invade Ukraine, the markets dropped heavily, and day after day was more and more concern. And then eventually when they did cross the border, the market on that day or that week probably suffered somewhat of a muted reaction because it had already been priced in the weeks to the build-up of that actual development. So are we desensitized? I don't think we're desensitized. I just think that the concern regarding this topic has somewhat been priced in. It's the escalations now that will be of some concern. So do we see an escalation in the conflict? And yes, you're right to mention the dreaded nuclear word, although I hope for the sake of humanity more than anything else that is highly unlikely to happen, because I'm not sure there can be a winner if anybody presses a big red button.
Indeed. So you mentioned there buy the rumor, sell the facts. And we've seen a big buy move in stocks with Donald Trump coming in and rumors of what he may be doing when he comes in to power in early 2025. And, particularly interesting move, very sharp movement up in the S&P 500 after, which it has eased off since. When we're looking at this buy the rumor, sell the fact trade and applying it to Donald Trump coming into his second term in the White House, Mark, do you think that move that we saw is the market reacting and pretty much pricing in all of the benefits that they may see? Of course, there's going to be tax cuts. That's a big driver for US equities. Of course, deregulation, of course, is going to be a big factor for investors when they're looking at US equities. So, the question is here, how much of the good news around Donald Trump do you feel is already priced into markets? And do you think that when these policies are enacted and announced and those rumours are confirmed, that we may see a little bit of selling in the market and then people starting to focus on the unintended consequences of tariffs, for example?
Well, I think we should be cautiously optimistic. The reaction to Trump's impending installation in the White House has been spectacular. We've seen record highs on US markets and a number of stocks, and we know that he's a pro-business chap, like him or loathe him. He's a divisive character, of course, but he is very much pro-business, and he will do many things to grease the wheels of big business. And if that's deregulation and tax incentives, I'm sure he'll be sprinkling them all over corporate America to try and get big business on track and moving forward and boosting the overall economy. Yes, we must be wary of an ambush, even if it's a profit taking one. Markets have gone higher, and the risk with toppy markets is that if there is a wobble or a storm in a teacup, then they can retrace pretty quickly with a rush to the exit, with investors looking to book profits before they diminish. So that's a very real risk. And I think last time we spoke on the podcast, I was keen to see investors be invested, but not wholly, and sort of keeping some powder dry for retracements to add to positions.
Indeed. So we're going to talk about a stock now, which actually overnight did have some retracement. But looking at the US pre-market, we're recording this on Thursday, we had Nvidia's results overnight. There was a big spike down on the news as soon as the results came in. But just looking at where it is set to open, it's going to be opening pretty much flat. So just running through the numbers there, a spectacular Q3 for the chip maker. They were expecting earnings of 74 cents. It came in at 81. They were expecting the data center revenue to come in at 29.1 billion. That came in at 30.8. So it was a big, big beats there. There was a little bit of disappointment, however, with their guidance for revenue for the next quarter. There was some estimates out there of 37.5 $37.5 billion, but that actually came a little bit softer at 37.1. So I think that was probably the main driver in that initial move that we saw in the pre-market, although that has been bought into. So when we're looking at these results last night, should investors be disappointed about what they've seen there, or do you think it's more of a reality check that, you know, we've seen, you know, to the quarter on the last year's number, a nearly 100% jump in revenue for Nvidia there, a big jump there. We've seen in previous quarters big beats, and that's caused quite a considerable move in the share price. We haven't seen that yet. You know, there seems to be some normalization there. So is it a set of numbers that investors should be disappointed with, Mark? And ultimately, when we're looking forward, does it detract from the investment case in Nvidia that it could go and push on? And looking at some of the broker moves this morning in terms of where they have the price still up at around $200 or so, do you think what we've seen last night derails any movement up to those numbers?
I find it hard to believe that investors could be anything but ecstatic with the numbers, to be honest. I mean, they're truly mind-boggling. Revenue of $35 billion in just 3 months. It's really quite something. And this is an industry that will continue to grow. You know, I can't see a risk of contraction anywhere. Year after year, we need more and more processing chips, as everything that we seem to interact with is very much digital and smart, and long may it continue. I mean, this is a company that we featured in our top picks for 2023, so we're going back now to the beginning of last year. At the time, we listed that stock at $166, and there's been a 10-for-1 stock split since, so that would equate to sort of $16 in today's money, which means that it's up 750% in less than 2 years. And when you consider that the record high on this stock with the new adjusted price is about $150, and I'm looking at the current price of $147, and it's actually up over 1% now in pre-market, I think that tells you all we need to know about this stock. Interestingly, as you mentioned, a number of brokers have already adjusted their ratings or price targets on the company. And overnight, I see here that Bernstein, SocGen and Citigroup have raised their price target on the stock to $175. Deutsche, interestingly, have got a hold rating and a price target of 140, which is a smidge below where we are. Morgan Stanley have increased theirs to 168. And it looks like Evercore are the most bullish with a $190 price target. So bar Deutsche Bank, we've got probably half a dozen brokers there that are saying there's still upside to be had from this.
Thank you. So just a note to listeners, if you do check out the notes to this podcast, there'll be a link through to download some sample reports of F&O's Pro Views, which brings together all of these broker views to give you a good insight into some of the suggestions that the brokers have on where some of these stocks could be going. Now, one of these stocks that I know that you picked up on, Mark, a few weeks ago was AMD. Particularly bullish price targets from the brokers there. And it hasn't had a huge amount of movement in the share price. But of course, you know, the thesis behind it is pretty similar to Nvidia. It's very much part of the AI trade and the demand for chips. When you're looking at this stock, Mark, when it's bouncing around these levels now, you know, how confident are you in those broker tips? And, you know, what are the key factors that are driving this stock at the moment?
Well, firstly, I suppose to caveat, you know, analyst recommendations, you know, they can be wrong, and you know, from time to time they are. So, you know, I wouldn't hang my hat solely on what a broker has to say. But when we're trying to build up a bit of a picture, an investment picture, you know, should I be, you know, moving toward or away from a particular stock, then I want to start putting pieces of that jigsaw together. And one of the things that I will consider is broker comments or recommendations. So, for example, this week, we've seen a number of brokers speak positively about the prospects for the S&P 500 next year once Donald Trump is established in the White House. Wells Fargo yesterday gave a target of 6,600 points for the S&P 500. We're currently trading at around 5,900, so they're saying another 700 points there on the index. But earlier on in the week, Goldman's and Morgan Stanley tipped the S&P 500 to hit 6,500, and UBS said 6,400. So yes, they could all be wrong, and we never quite know what is around the corner. But when you've got four established institutions tipping, let's say, corporate America, which is, you know, what the S&P 500 can be considered, to rally by such a degree, then for that not to happen, Wall Street almost has to be entirely wrong, and all of these great institutions have to be wrong. So, you know, we can apply that as well to AMD, you know, with the ProView document that you mentioned of the 1st of November, just a few weeks back. Benchmark gave AMD a target price of $200, Evercore 198, and UBS 205. So you're talking approximately 40% upside being tipped for this stock by three different brokers in the same week. Well, that is something that I will factor into my decision-making process. Are the brokers all for or against the stock that I'm considering buying? Intriguingly as well, I like to look at technical analysis, which is backward looking. It is the, you know, the analyzing of historical data. And so, you know, that can be also dismissed, and I wouldn't hang my hat solely on a chart, but it is another piece of the jigsaw. And AMD at around the current levels is interacting with potential support when looking at how the share price has interacted historically. And why should I factor this in? Well, I find a chart almost gives a share price a voice. Bear with me. If we were to see a stock consistently trade between, say, £1 and £1.30, and it tended to go up and down between these two figures over the course of, say, a year, and it had done so on a handful of occasions. Well, for that year, we can say, okay, historically speaking, that £1 has been the price to buy this stock and £1.30 has been the price to sell this stock. We might have to look at why those prices are important, but if it gives the share price a voice, then it's a case of the price is a pound, this is cheap, we should buy, and that's justified then by the move north to £1.30, where the market then says, well, hang on, this is now too expensive, this is the price to sell, and it moves back down. Regardless of what the influences are, that is what the share price is telling us. So if with AMD we see the share price retreat to a potential buying platform once again, because historically that has been where the market wants to buy, then that should be factored in as well. So whilst I'm not encouraging your listeners to go out and buy AMD, if they're interested in a chip maker stock, then here is one where there's a handful of brokers that are saying there's potentially 40% upside. And from a technical perspective, it has moved south towards a potential support level. I'm starting to get a couple of green lights for potentially pursuing this trade. Yes, I would want to go and do some more homework, but these are, I think, fundamental building blocks that we should be considering before we consider clicking buy.
Thank you. So we're going to touch on a few stocks now that have had some particularly interesting moves. We're going to be discussing some UK listed stocks. I know it's been pretty US focused so far, but before we get into the UK ones, I think you've got to talk, Mark, about Bitcoin, huge rally, just coming up to $100,000. It looks as though it's probably going to go through that level. Be very surprised if it doesn't break that 100,000 level, given the momentum that it's had. This is very much a Trump trade. There's rumors and talks and reports of going on that Trump's Truth Media are in talks to buy a Bitcoin exchange. Of course, Donald Trump's been very favorable to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, so that's very much driving the trade there. This is filtered down into a number of stocks, one of those being Coinbase. I think it's up about 50% over the past month or so. When you're looking at these particular companies, Mark, you have the underlying asset in Bitcoin, and then you have the company in Coinbase. Of course, their rally in Bitcoin is playing through to Coinbase there, and that's pushing the shares up. But how much do you feel that the move in the share price is a reaction of the move in Bitcoin that may be a little bit overdone? If we see a 50% move up in the share price, is this really going to translate to bigger profits for Coinbase, or is it just equity investors looking for something to trade, Coinbase being a prime example, and jumping into that stock as opposed to buying the actual Bitcoins?
Well, firstly, Jonathan, you might know that I'm a bit of a tech dinosaur, and I have attempted in the past to try and understand how to buy Bitcoin, and it quickly turns out that I needed to open some kind of wallet and then transfer money into dollars and then do all this sort of clever stuff to then be able to buy a Bitcoin. And I got lost in, you know, the early stages of trying to make that happen. So if there are people like me that struggle with the complexities of getting their hands on the cryptocurrency, then an easy way to do that is to buy a related equity that you'll find in a very ordinary trading platform like your Barclays share dealing, Halifax, Hargreaves Lansdowne, where perhaps a lot of retail investors do have access. Coinbase is a cryptocurrency trading platform. So as a company, they will make money on transactional fees. And with Bitcoin going crackers, as you rightly highlight, that should mean that lots of people are logging into their Coinbase accounts and buying and selling and buying and selling, and that should benefit Coinbase. To what degree? We'll find out when they update the market. Could the current move have gotten ahead of itself? Well, probably. You know, it is that sort of pile-in mentality which can overshoot, a bit like when people panic sell. It can overshoot. The market does often get ahead of itself, for better or worse. But you know, to sort of put in a shameless plug for the F&O Research Service, on the same ProView that we mentioned AMD, Coinbase was featured as well. In that particular week, there were at least four broker comments on the stock that we picked up on, and the target prices were very lofty. And I'll give you the percentages. One broker was tipping the stock to increase 41%. Another 56%. A third suggested the stock could go up 61%. And then Bank of America were a little stingy by comparison, saying it would go up 19%. But some pretty punchy upside potential there. And the share at the time was trading at $180. Well, today Coinbase trades at $330. So I'll correct you slightly on your 50% upside. In fact, in just 20 days since we published this ProView publication, Coinbase shares have gone up 83%. And that's why it is really key to get this need-to-know information in a timely fashion, because literally just a few weeks later, I think you've probably got to concede you've missed the boat on this one, at least for now.
So we're going to bring it back to the UK, and we're going to finish off with a selection of UK stocks now, Mark. One real household favourite, is BP. Now, we're looking at the share price here. You know, if we go back to just June this year, we were trading up and around the £5 level. But we see BP now trading beneath £4. It's been bouncing around that £3.80 level. Looking at it here today, £3.87. Now, I know that there are some very positive views on BP at the moment from the brokers. But of course, we see very little movement. There's been a bit of an uptick, but there's a very firm downtrend at the moment for BP. And of course, Shell as well. Shell's pretty much in that same trend to the downside as well. What do you think of the factors are that are at play with BP at the moment? It's got a massive dividend yield, nearly 6%, embarking on huge share buybacks as well. That's a big factor for shareholders. But we're just seeing it being left behind to some extent. Now, is this a consequence of the lower oil prices that we see at the moment? Of course, that's going to be feeding through into earnings. Of course, that's one of the biggest factors for BP at the moment. But as we know, they can quickly pick up. But it seems that investors are overlooking the yield that we see for BP at the moment, Mark. So what do you see the key factors are for the company at the moment?
I think there's many at the moment, Jonathan, and I'll rattle through some of them. Bar the recent escalation of Ukraine firing a rocket with "Made in the USA" on it into Russia, actually the Ukraine-Russia conflict wasn't occupying many column inches in the news. Middle Eastern conflict had sort of worked its way back through the pages of the newspapers as well, not to suggest that things had calmed down, but we certainly weren't being bombarded with all of the negativity of just a few weeks ago. And of course, if conflict escalates, especially in these oil-rich regions, then that tends to push prices up. So that's probably worked against the oil price, which is trading circa $70 a barrel at the moment. We've also seen many oil companies suspend operations in the Gulf of Mexico because of the hurricane season, which means that we've got facilities offline, which, on one hand could see production lower, oil prices rise, but it does also mean that that facility, if it isn't operational, is not doing the business that it should do as well. So that can also impact the bottom line of the oil producers. OPEC Plus has, been threatening to perhaps turn on taps again and raise their output, although they haven't done yet, which could then flood the market with more supply. And there've been question marks as well over the state of economies, both in the Western world and in China as well. How strong are these economies? Are they starting to slow? And what will their demand be for the use of oil? And on top of all of that, we've then had the attitude that there's just something better to be had out there. In amongst all of this recent Trump euphoria, do you really want to buy a BP, or do you want to be filling your boots with Coinbase and Tesla and everything else that's been going crackers? So there have probably been better places to put your money in recent weeks as well. But that said, that same ProView document that we keep referencing, RBC have a target price of £4.80. UBS have a target price of £5.25. They're significantly higher than where we are. And could be seen as a little ambitious. However, these share prices were witnessed just earlier on this year. The price was £4.80 back in July, so less than 6 months ago, and it was £5.25 just in May. So, a turn in fortune, and perhaps some of these stocks could come back into focus. And actually, when the chips are down and when the headlines aren't that great, and when the brokers start to suggest they could turn, this could be just the right time to start putting oil stocks on the radar. Perhaps not rushing out and filling your boots just yet, but we want to be looking at things when, from a buying perspective, when the prices are low and the headlines are a little bit gloomy, but with that forward potential. And you mentioned Shell earlier this week, Barclays tipped Shell to gain to £36 actually, and that's 40% higher than where we are. That's a target price for next year, 2025. So yeah, keep your eye on oil. It could be getting to a point where perhaps it does make some sense to edge into some of these stocks.
Yes, I think one thing to watch, as you mentioned there, Mark, is of course OPEC. They've recently delayed plans to increase their oil production. And of course, they've got one eye on the prices. And if they start to, as you say, open up the taps a little bit more, that's only going to have a place a further weight on the price. And that's certainly something that they do not want. So we're going to finish off now, Mark, with the UK banks, very hot topic around the UK budget. We saw quite a sharp decline in Lloyds, in particular around the motor financing. So the question is here, when you're looking at this sector, there is, of course, a very high level of correlation between the banks. If you look at NatWest, Barclays and Lloyds, the UK-focused ones, they do tend to move in a very similar fashion, the caveat being that Lloyds has been hit pretty heavily by the concerns of the motor financing, what that litigation may look like. But when you're looking at this sector, Mark, how would you approach it? Are there any ones that you would pick out? Do you feel that there's going to be any real winners, or do you think it should be a diversification play that if you like the UK banks, you should probably get a good spread as opposed to trying to pick one out?
Yeah, it's a difficult sector to get behind at the moment. We did have Lloyd's feature in a Chartist document not long ago. That's our technical analysis publication, because the shares had fallen to about 53 pence, which has been a price that has provided some support over the sort of middle part of this year, bounced off of that price on a few occasions, May, August, and then more recently in October. But that would be more of a potential trading position, perhaps looking for upside towards the sort of 60p level. I mean, it's slowly moved up from sort of 53 to 55, so not setting the world alight. And if it does get to 60p, that'll only be a 13%, I'll say only, but only a 13%. Increase, and then you're starting to get towards year highs, and perhaps you need to look to perhaps exit that stock then, unless you really think it's going to shoot the lights out. Barclays, we are fond of on the basis that, yes, it's got significant UK exposure, but it's got exposure to US markets as well. And Barclays did start to tick higher on Trump's appointment to the White House. But again, if you go back to November last year, Barclays has doubled in that time. So, are we 1 year late to that party on the basis we've seen 100% upside? And then NatWest was a company that we featured in our top picks for 2024. So, beginning of this year, it featured at £2.18 a share. That's knocking on the door of £4 now, up 82%. So, great trade. The team did well to highlight that one back in December, January. But there is a concern that, you could be turning up a little late to the party here. So, would it be an idea to have some exposure? Well, on the basis that we've so far spoken about chip makers whom we can't see a future without. We've spoken about oil stocks, that same box is ticked. Well, yes, we can't do without financial institutions, but it will be heavily reliant upon the US economy starting to chug along under Trump's stewardship, and hopefully that taking the rest of the world with it. And if China starts to perk up and the UK can get going in the new year, then there will still be upside for those banks. But I think cautiously approach them at the moment.
And I think a pretty good sign for NatWest in particular was that the UK government selling a 1 billion stake in the company to sell down their existing holdings there. So that certainly shows that they have one eye on the share price and maybe thinking it's looking a little bit rich at this point in time. So just as a final note to listeners, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there'll be a link through to download the documents, a sample of the documents that Mark have discussed on this podcast, and you'll be able to get a full breakdown of some of those market suggestions, as well as the technical breakdowns for the companies that Mark touched on. So Mark, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jonathan.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.